Praise 100.9 and 92.7 Charlotte's Inspiration Station. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland, exploring the issues that impact our community, providing an in-depth analysis of the latest national discussion, and hitting the issues hard in a thoughtful, passionate, and provocative way. We have another thought-provoking show for you this morning. Another shooting death of an unarmed black man by police. We're going to talk about that here on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
Community Voices with Ron Holland. In-depth analysis, thought-provoking, and hard-hitting. Community Voices with Ron Holland. Giving you an opportunity to share what's on your mind and in your heart. Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
Michael Brown, 18, Ferguson, Missouri. Ezell Ford, 24, Los Angeles, California. Eric Garner, 43, of New York City. Jonathan Farrell, 24, of Charlotte, North Carolina. Sean Bell, 23, New York City. Orlando Barlow, 28, Los Angeles, California. Timothy Stansberry Jr., 19, Brooklyn, New York. Timothy Russell and Melissa Williams of Cleveland, Ohio, shot and killed by police in 2012. 137 rounds were fired into their car by the police. After a subsequent police chase in which no weapon was found on either of the victims. These, my friends, are but a few names of young black men, young and old, who were unjustifiably killed by the police. And it's, in my judgment, a three-week story at best in the media. The crowd goes home. The anger wanes. Reporters are off to the next big story, and left in the wake of these tragic events are grieving parents and close friends and community activists who are standing steadfast behind the scenes, keeping watch on how the court proceedings play out. But the crowds are gone. The news trucks are forming a caravan out of town. And it's all but forgotten until the next situation arises. I want to ask a question. When is the life of a black man, of black teens, of black boys, when are their lives going to be respected and valued in this country? When is the life of young men going to be perched on a pedestal to be cherished and highly regarded instead of being relegated to the lowest rung of society and given respectability as cow dung? When, my friends, will we ever see the day that justice is served when innocent black men and young boys and young teens, when they are gunned down by the police unjustifiably? When is there going to be justice? Before I go on, I want to rattle off a disclaimer, if you might permit me, because I think it's important. Not all police officers are bad. Not all police officers are bigots. Not all police officers are masking a seething hatred for African-American men. Not all police officers are setting out each day during their shifts to hunt down young black men. And I want to be clear about this. I have friends and family members who are police officers. Some of my officer friends are black, some are white, some are Hispanic, some are female. I have friends in every category. But just as there are bigots and people that harbor prejudice and stereotypes in other professions, especially in positions of power, the police department, regardless of city, regardless of state, have in their ranks officers who are mired in their own prejudices and their own stereotypes. And unfortunately, when police officers have anger issues, a bad disposition, a horrible temperament, or perhaps might be doped up or drunk or on steroids, or having something coursing through their system, these instances can lead to an unjustifiable killing of a young black man. the beating of a 51-year-old woman on a highway, or the slamming to the ground of an 84-year-old woman in a parking lot walking with a cane, or the choking death of a man who broke up a fight and perhaps might have been selling Lucy's or cigarettes on the street. My friends, there's not a police department, corporation, business firm, government agency, or private enterprise in this country that's immune from having in their ranks individuals that hold some type of prejudice and stereotypical judgments against folks of other races and folks who perhaps have a different sexual orientation. This is precisely why there are laws on the books to address issues of discrimination and bigotry and racism, because the public is at risk when individuals like this are lurking in the ranks of police departments and corporations. I've been watching the news all week, and it saddens me of what is going on in Ferguson, Missouri right now, the murder. Now, let me be a little bit more tactful here. The unjustifiable killing of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri is an outrage. Folks, this is an outrage. This is sickening to me. And I'm tired of black men being gunned down by the police. I'm tired of black men being gunned down by gang members. I'm tired of black men being gunned down by themselves in this so-called black-on-black crime. But I want to circle back, because I'm tired of arrogant and power-hungry thugs with a badge roaming the streets like predators looking for an opportunity to snatch the life of young black men. I'm tired of this nonsense. The question that continues to plague my spirit every time these issues emerge, when are white folks in this country going to be outraged? When are they going to express frustration that young black men are being unjustifiably killed? They're quick to harp on black-on-black crime, but are deadly silent when the power and the weight of a police badge comes barreling down on innocent, unarmed black men, young and old. Are you tired yet? And I suspect that when their boys are senselessly murdered by uniformed thugs, we'll hear their outrage. As most of you know, the violence that erupted in Ferguson, Missouri is as a result of the shooting death of 18-year-old Michael Brown by Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson, 18 years old, heading to college. Senselessly murdered, in my judgment. But to be tactful, he was killed. What we know so far is that Michael Brown and a friend, Dorian Johnson, was heading to his grandmother's home. He and Dorian Johnson, his friend, were walking in the street when the police pulled alongside of them. The officer responsible for gunning down Brown apparently yelled an expletive at them and ordered them out of the street. Dorian Johnson indicates that he and Brown responded that they were moments away from his grandmother's house. Apparently, the police car apparently backed up and the altercation ensued. Let's take a listen to the audio of Mike Brown's friend, Dorian Johnson.
Me and my friend, we was walking down the street in the middle of the street, and we wasn't causing any harm to nobody. We had no weapons on us at all. We just walking, having a conversation. No cars were blowing at us or honking at us like we was holding up traffic or anything like that. A police officer squad car pulled up, and when he pulled up, these was his exact words. He said, "Get the F on the sidewalk." And we told the officer we was not but a minute away from our destination, and we was surely be out the street as we continued to walk. And then he reversed his truck, his car, so he pulled up on the side of us. He tried to thrust his door open, but we were so close to it that it ricocheted off us and it bounced back to him. And at that time, he reached out the window. He didn't get out the car. He just reached his arm out the window and grabbed my friend around his neck, and was trying to, as he was trying to choke my friend, and he was trying to get away, and the officer then reached out and he grabbed his arm to pull him into the car. His weapon was drawn, and he said, "I'll shoot you," or "I'm going to shoot." And in the same moment, the first shot went off, and we looked at him. He was shot, and it was blood coming from him, and we took off running. And as we took off running, I ducked and hid for my life because I was feared for my life. My friend, he kept running. As he was running, the officer was trying to get out of the car, and once he got out the car, he pursued my friend, but his weapon was drawn. His weapon was already drawn when he got out the car. He shot again, and once my friend felt that shot, he turned around and he put his hands in the air, and he started to get down, but the officer still approached with his weapon drawn, and he fired several more shots.
Now let's take a listen to a new witness, Tiffany Mitchell, and this is from KMOV News in Ferguson. Take a listen.
As I was coming around the corner, I heard the tire squeaking on the truck, and as I get closer is when I see them tussling through the window. Like, the kid was pulling off, and the cop was, like, pulling in. That just didn't look right for them to be wrestling, but the first gunshot came from the window, so, like, I could start getting out the way because the shots just came after that. At this time, after the shot, the kid breaks away and he started running away from the cop. The cop follows him and kept shooting, and the kid body jerked as if he was hit. And after his body jerked, he turned around, he puts his hands up, and the cop just continues to walk up on him and shoot him until he goes all the way down.
Incredible. Do you want to know why the police version of events are contradictory? It's for the same reason why reporters were being arrested and why Ferguson police were desperately trying to stop the protests. They were mounting efforts to obscure abusive behaviors. If what Dorian Johnson and Tiffany Mitchell are saying is actually true, then we're dealing with an abusive, arrogant, power-tripping police officer mired in a need to control others. This officer shot Brown down like a dog. This kid had his hands up. What other position of surrender is there but to have your hands up? Shooting him round after round after round. The kid had his hands up. It may not necessarily be a racial issue. It's about control. It's about abuse. And, of course, it's a stereotypical perspective from individuals like that. And what is so pronounced here is that it appears that the officer works for a department and is intricately tied to a system that bolsters this kind of behavior, because it's happening all over the daggone country. It's happening everywhere. Could it be that a department of 53 white officers and 3 black officers and a local government of a majority of whites, including the mayor and 1 black person on the council, that these behaviors found security and comfort in a town like Ferguson, in towns all over the country, in places like LA and New York City? And now that Officer Darren Wilson's name has been released, the police are making every effort to obscure this unjustified killing of Michael Brown by now claiming that the still photos and some video show that he robbed a convenience store. How convenient, after a week of protest, after a week of community leaders and community activists and folks in the community were begging for answers. Now, after an entire week of all of this chaos, they are suggesting that Brown was involved in a strong-arm robbery of a convenience store. And my folks, in my judgment, they are besmirching Michael Brown's name. They are sullying his character. They are doing whatever they can to obscure the fact that the shooting down in cold blood, a man who had his hands raised in surrender. Let's not forget that. Let's not forget that more than 3 witnesses have said that Michael Brown had his back turned to the police running away, and he was shot in the back. And when his body jerked, as Tiffany Mitchell says, he turned around, raised his hand in surrender, and the officer, Darren Wilson, shot Michael Brown down like a dog. Let's not forget that. And if it turns out that Michael Brown, was involved in a robbery, and so far, from what I've seen, I don't believe that that's the case. We have a court of law to determine guilt, not an unjustifiable execution in the street. And I want to be clear about that. I want you to take a listen to Mike Brown's parents, Leslie McSpadden and Mike Brown Sr. Take a listen to this.
Best son we ever had.
No.
It was funny, silly. It make you laugh. Any problems that'll be going on or any situation, it wasn't nothing that he couldn't solve. Did it bring people back together? He's a good boy. He didn't deserve none of it. None of it. We need justice for our son. Our son.
No violence. Just justice, y'all. It's our son here. Just graduated on his way to college. We can't even celebrate. We got to plan a funeral. That's my firstborn son. Anybody that know me knew how I felt about my son. I just wish I could have been there to help him. Anything. He didn't deserve that. My son.
This is truly sad. It's heartbreaking. It's disheartening that we continue to grapple with this issue. And all week I've been hearing conversations about black parents being required to talk with their sons specifically about how to interact with police. As a black man, as a father of two sons and a father of a 17-year-old daughter and an uncle of several nephews, this is an issue I and so many black parents worry about on a daily basis. Anytime we walk out of our door, there's a profoundly tangible concern about a negative interaction with the police. White folks don't grapple with these fears and these concerns. This is real for us. This is not an imagined fear. It's based on years of experience, harrowing events that have plagued our community for many, many years. You know, I've been in martial arts since 13. I'm really good at it. And at night, I train in my garage, but there are times when I go out to train in an area that, is relatively dark because I like to train under the moonlight. It can be pitch black, but I enjoy training at night as well. And to be quite frank with you, there are times I have an expressed concern and reservations about being stopped by the police in my own neighborhood. It should not be this way, my friends. It shouldn't be that way where we're forced to have these conversations with our sons about how to interact with the police. This is an insult to me. This is a violation of my constitutional rights and the constitutional rights of every black parent in this country. That we have to teach our kids how to engage an officer, even when the daggone officer is wrong. This is an insult to us. Because white folks don't have to deal with this nonsense. You have white folks walking around with assault rifles in other states, and they are pointing weapons at federal officers, and they are not being harassed by the police. We are. A couple of months ago, these militia men were literally pointing assault rifles at federal agents. They weren't gunned down. They weren't harassed. They weren't being disrespected by the police. And yet we are forced to have this conversation with our kids because police officers are abusing their powers because they are mired in a power trip. Because they are mired in a superiority complex when they are patrolling our communities. This should not be. We should not have or have to have this conversation. We ought to be respected in our community. This is despicable. What conversations are white fathers having with their darn sons about interacting with police? And if anybody suggests to me that white boys aren't being disrespectful or criminally oriented or not involved in behaviors that invite or require police scrutiny, I have a bridge to sell you. Where's the parity here? Where's the equality? Where's the notion of equal justice and equal enforcement in all communities? Because the reality is, many of these officers are not protecting and serving our community. They are in our communities to harass us, to harm us, to exert control and display a disdain for people they see less than human. And again, I'm not talking about all police officers, but I find it curious that the good officers are not saying a daggone word. Was listening to conservative talk radio, as I often do, particularly in cases like this, because there you can see the demarcation between how we view things and how ultra-conservatives view things. I want to address this issue of black-on-black crime before we continue this, because that's the conversation that many folks on that side of the political aisle think. Do not conflate black-on-black crime with instances of police shooting. When cops shoot and kill innocent black men or a kid, it does not negate our responsibility to hold that officer and the system accountable, which is allowing these shootings to continue. And I am telling you, it is happening on a daily basis. We grapple with black-on-black crime, but there is a system in place to deal with that issue. And I want to say this because it's important for those folks who have a critical eye about this perspective. We can walk and chew gum at the same time. We're capable of doing both. So when you hurl the idea of black-on-black crime or gang violence, let me be clear. We are dealing with that issue in a forthright way. Because in the end, the thug that shoots and maims in our community will eventually get caught, and he will serve his time. The likelihood of a white cop serving time for the same egregious behaviors is almost non-existent. We are more, folks, more than capable of addressing instances of injustice inflicted on our community and fighting our own ratchet and despicable behaviors. I hear white folks and black folks as well. I hear them say all the time when this issue happens, what about black on black crime? Clean up your own backyard before we complain about white cops. Why are they marching and rallying when gangs are shooting and killing? There's always mobilization efforts in our community to stop the violence. That's a specious argument advanced by people who are either ignorant, who either don't care or have no real appreciation of the pain we experience when these issues arise. We are addressing these issues of violence in our own community. The work we do in encouraging our young folks to lead respectable lives is we're cleaning up our community. Our bevy of mentorship programs, leadership academies, and recreational and youthful activities. We are cleaning up our own backyard. The countless partnerships with major corporations to bring jobs to the community and underwrite a host of academic and sports and arts programs. We are cleaning up our backyard. And I get tired of people minimizing the valiant efforts of so many groups and organizations and individuals who are making a difference in our community just to avoid having to address the injustices we are seeing in our society. We can speak with great authority and credibility because many of us are doing the work of cleaning our own backyard. I have never bought into the argument that we can't fight injustice because of so-called black-on-black crime and because some knuckleheads among us are living the life of crime. As I've said, at the end of the day, those knuckleheads will eventually pay the piper. They are going to get caught. And we can simultaneously fight against systems of injustice and fight crime in our community. About to wrap up. Since the 80s and 90s, police killing of young black men and police brutality has been an issue that resonated with me. I was involved in dozens and dozens of protests and demonstrations led by Reverend Sharpton when I was home in Jersey. I would drive up to Harlem, which was only an hour ride from Jersey, to participate in Sharpton's rallies and demonstrations. And it was during those moments that I realized that this tragedy wasn't exclusive to New York City, the East Coast, or the West Coast. It could happen anywhere in this country. Anywhere. Reverend Sharpton, of course, and other community leaders are involved, and they are there on the ground dealing with this issue. Interestingly enough, reporters were being harassed and arrested and accosted by police, refusing to give their names and badge numbers in an effort to obscure their negative behaviors. You look at the scene this week of the violence that erupted and the police using tear gas. I thought I was looking at a picture from the Gaza Strip. People are going to voice their concerns and opinions. They have a justifiable right to express how they feel. The folks in Ferguson have a constitutional right to assemble, to protest peaceably, to express their anger and their frustration any time of the day. They are justified. Now, I don't support riots. I don't support looting stores because to me it's counterproductive and it's irresponsible. But I must say to you, the folks have a right to be angry and to protest the injustice. We saw police donned in military-styled outfits, perched atop armored vehicles in a sniper position, roaming the streets with mine-resistant vehicles and military-style weapons. That heavy-handed approach insulted everyone, insulted the entire nation, and people all over the country responded in protest, not only to the killing of Michael Brown, but also this heavy militarized police presence. So it's my hope that peace and calm be the prevailing sentiment, but I must tell you again, this should serve as a moment of reflection and contemplation for police. The moment will come when the gathering crowd will not stand by and watch another black man or kid brutally beaten. The crowd will not stand by and watch a 54-year-old woman, possibly mentally challenged, getting repeatedly punched in the face. The crowd will not stand by and watch the life being choked out of another innocent black man. The crowd will not stand by and film an 84-year-old woman being slammed to the ground by police as blood drains from her head. There's going to be a justified reaction to your detriment. You have holstered and drawn weapons, but that will not match the rage of a crowd of people who just beheld a senseless murder before their eyes. I am tired of accommodating the irrational fears and anxiety of police officers. I've heard all the excuses time and again. The officer feared, yada, yada, yada. I am certainly sympathetic to the extraordinary job police contend with on a daily basis. Crime is bad. These officers put their lives on the line every day. They face an uphill battle trying to bring crime down and maintain a working relationship with various communities. But there comes a time when the police have to hold their own accountable. There comes a time where the community has to hold officers accountable, especially where innocent people are the victims of brutality or unjustified killings and shooting. This, what happened in Ferguson, the killing of Mike Brown, is a despicable and cowardly act. And justice needs to reign in this instance. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll wrap up the show. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. We're going to continue watching the developments of the shooting death of Mike Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. I hope and pray the violence and heavy-handed approach by police stops. And we're certainly going to continue praying for the parents of Michael Brown, Michael Brown Sr., and Leslie McSpadden. If you have any comments on today's show, please send me an email, ronholland@radio-1.com or ronholland25@yahoo.com. I also invite you to visit my blog for some insightful and provocative commentary, www.ronhollands.blogspot.com. This show is also available on our Praise Charlotte website as well as our Old School 105.3 website. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's Community Voices. I'm Ron Holland. We'll talk with you next week.